Japan's chief cabinet secretary has now said that although we cannot directly check it, it's likely that fuel rods are melting at the Fukushima power plant. We're going to speak to a nuclear scientist in a few minutes, so we'll have that story for you. But meanwhile, a tide of bodies is washing up along Japan's coastline. Crematoriums are overwhelmed, rescue workers running out of body bags. On this day four of the disaster created by Friday's earthquake and tsunami, millions of people are still without water, food, or heat in the devastated northeast. The pulverized coast has been hit by hundreds of aftershocks. The latest one, a 6.2 magnitude quake, followed by a new tsunami scare today. But as that announcement that followed told nervous residents, it was a false alarm. The BBC's Rachel Harvey has been in the northeast city of Minami Sanrico, about 50 miles from the epicenter of the quake. Rachel, it's the middle of the night now, but tell us what you saw there today.
Well, we spent most of the day getting into different districts of that city today. Yesterday we got to the outskirts. Today we managed to get in, and that's because the diggers had done their work in clearing a route through. And that allowed not just us, of course, but far more importantly, the rescue workers to get into these areas. So they've been fanning out across the destroyed parts of this coastline and sifting through the rubble and debris, trying to see if there was anybody who could possibly have remained alive at this time. But realistically, sadly, it is really to retrieve bodies at this stage. The area here is absolutely devastated. There are a series of inlets from the coastline, the sort of headlands and then inlets, another headland and another inlet. And every inlet is like a kind of valley between mountains. And each time you come across one of those, it is absolutely wrecked. The area has just been flattened. Every now and again, there might be bits of a larger building that have remained roughly intact. But in between, all the wooden houses, the lower-lying buildings, they've just gone.
Well, amazingly, though, there are survivors. You were in the house of an elderly man, and here's a bit of what he told you. Let's listen.
74 years old. I have never seen things like this before in my life.
And, you know, Rachel, we're thinking at 74, you know, he has seen, or the Japanese have seen, you know, two nuclear bombs, other earthquakes. But they're saying that this is the most devastated, you know, they've been. Do you think out of a town of 17,000, how many survivors do you think there are?
They are saying that there are still somewhere in the region of 10,000 that remain unaccounted for. So that's more than half the population of this area. That doesn't mean, of course, that all of those people are feared dead. It is still possible that lots of people did get out when the evacuation order was given and that they're now staying with friends and relatives. But part of the problem is there aren't any working phone networks and there isn't any power in this area. So if people have gone to stay with someone else, they wouldn't necessarily be able to get in touch with people to let them know that they're okay. So that is a real challenge for the authorities, just trying to get the information about who precisely is where. Those people that have survived, and many did, we've heard stories of people that evacuated as soon as they felt the strong earthquake. They knew what might come, and that is because, of course, they trained for this from a very early age, from school age. They go through earthquake and tsunami drills, so people knew to try and get to higher ground. Those that did, and did so in time, have survived. Those that weren't quick enough or who decided they just didn't want to leave, those are those who may have perished.
Well, and we understand people are writing in chalk on their roofs, we need help, words to that effect. And, of course, that reminds us of Hurricane Katrina here in the U.S. But what about food, water, blankets for warmth? What about that?
Well, most people are trying to make do with what they've got, with the supplies that they already had at home. Water is definitely in short supply, particularly gas as well is in short supply. There are long, long queues at any gas station that is still open. So people are being very careful about the journeys that they make. Food is also pretty much what people have. There were a few shops open when we drove up here, but those that were open, again, there were long lines outside of people waiting just to buy whatever they could get their hands on.
Well, and what's the sense of people? I would imagine shock. What, you know, what How do they feel to you?
It's very difficult with Japanese culture. People tend to be rather reserved, particularly with strangers. There is a definite stoicism that people are just trying to do the best they can and get on with it. But I think there is definitely a sense of shock and still a lot of anxiety because we do have these strong aftershocks. We have that tsunami warning again this morning. And there are the reports, of course, coming through from the nuclear power plant. So there is an awful lot of nervousness and anxiety around. But people also have this determination that they will rebuild, that this is where they live, this is their home. Japan has always known that it lives on this fault line and these are potential hazards. But there is this real sense of trying to keep the emotions in check and try and just deal with the practicalities.
Well, it's interesting. We've watched these pictures that are becoming iconic back here, a woman just standing with a blanket around her, with just surrounded by debris. But also this orderly sort of response. And a professor at Oxford has said, well, that is, as you said, the Japanese culture, a high level of education, also a sense of collective values, you know, people working together to take care of each other. And elsewhere, we've heard reporters say there will be no looting. It just is not the way it's done. Is that the feeling that you have?
Absolutely. That is absolutely the picture here. There's been no sense that anybody could even contemplate looting at all. I mean, there are vending machines, for instance, just a small example, but there are vending machines all over Japan, everywhere you go. But of course, they're not working at the moment in this area because there's no power. Nothing. I have not seen a single vending machine that has been smashed or broken at all. And yet there's liquids inside those. There's water and Cokes and things that people might want. No one would even dream of breaking into one of those machines. I stayed last night in an evacuation centre myself, sleeping on the floor with some of the evacuees on a school gym. And some volunteers had brought in some hot food this morning for breakfast. A woman came in with a loudspeaker and sort of made this announcement, look, we've got some hot food for you here. And immediately people jumped up and formed an orderly line and just waited patiently and were incredibly grateful for what they were given. And then people just do respond in a very calm and orderly manner. And whether that's culture, whether that's because of education, that they know they might face these kind of disasters, it is certainly a very, very ordered and organized response to what has been a catastrophic disaster.
You mentioned the nuclear power plant. We're going to be speaking about that in just a moment. But are you seeing, you said there's no power, but is there a sense that there will be little? We're hearing of rolling blackouts, for instance.
The immediate priorities, I think, is try and get food and water and gas up in this area. Obviously, as soon as they can get the power back on, then that means people will have heat again. So as soon as those things can be sorted out, then life will begin to improve considerably for people that have survived this. But in the short term, I think it's going to take them an awfully long time to get those kind of major infrastructural projects underway.
Well, and that's, I guess, the last question there. When does this town begin functioning as a town? You know, what's the industry? What do people do if everything's flattened?
In this particular town, it is really hard to imagine how they start again from this, despite the fact that those people I've spoken to say they are determined to do so, that they will rebuild. It was a mixed community of fishing industries, agriculture. There was one place we visited today that had obviously had a lot of polytunnels, quite large-scale polytunnels, and their big plastic sheets were just billowing in the cold wind. Kind of eerie feeling. So there's agriculture, there was fishing, and there was some light industry in this area. Well, all of that has been absolutely wrecked. They're going to have to start again from scratch.
That's the BBC's Rachel Harvey from the northeast city of Miyami Sanriko in Japan. Rachel, thank you.
Thank you.